IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Hi, this is Carl. Welcome to episode 29 of the Killing It,
Killing It Podcast.
So I am coming to you from Montreal, where Ryan was last time. And I'm here with representing the Small Biz Thoughts community. And we do all kinds of fun stuff to help IT professionals be more successful. And I'm joined by my good friends, Dave and Ryan. So Dave, where are you today? Did you already go to Europe and back?
I did. In the time since the last episode, I went to Europe and came back. Came in late last night, stayed up late watching the game. And here we are early morning doing this one. I'm Dave Sobel with MSPRadio.com, doing not only this show, but we're working on some new projects. So sign up there and find out what we're up to.
Very cool. Ryan?
Excellent. And I am Ryan Morris. I'm coming to you today from the beautiful Queen City of Charlotte, North Carolina, here for planning meetings with the client. And my outfit, we are known as Morris Management Partners. We are a consulting research and analyst firm that focuses on go-to-market strategy in the technology industry. We spend about half of our time working with the vendor community and about half working with the solution provider community, because if both sides of that equation don't know how to be a business and run it like a business, then all of us suffer. So we are here trying to change the future.
So with lots of coffee today.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I'm in Montreal, where literally Ryan was before. And as I was setting up my table yesterday, somebody looked down and looked at the Killing It podcast card and said, "Oh, I know that. I've been listening to that for a little while now." And I said, "Oh, how did you hear about it?" He said, "Oh, Ryan was here last month and he distributed those to everybody." So I'm like, "Oh man, I got to up my game."
We're gaining listeners one at a time.
I see this
by meeting them all.
Exactly.
Going our way to the top.
Our marketing strategy is to get on every airplane and go to every meeting and meet everybody in the industry. So if we've not met you yet, hey, it's coming.
This seems flawed. We should do
not exactly a scalable model.
We're losing thousands of dollars, but think of all the miles, right?
Exactly.
Very cool. So what are we talking about today?
Well, so I'm going to throw this one out because it's a follow-up to something Ryan asked about a couple of weeks ago when he brought up Jim Cramer and some of Jim's thinking on that. For those not familiar, Jim Cramer coined this term FANG, trying to put the collection of five stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google, as a big basket of technology stocks. And he's proposed making changes to it, calling it FAM, F-A-A-M, by dropping Netflix and Google and adding Microsoft. And so I saw this and link in the show notes, and I sort of laughed and said, I think FANG and FAM both are horrible measurements of the technology industry. Now, I know he's trying to do it for big tech, and I think these are horrible ones for the industry. So what are the right ones, guys? Like, what should we be watching to know the health of this industry?
See, I'll pick up on a couple of the original notes and carry it forward, right? So the original point we were making was when Main Street and Wall Street begin to pay attention to your industry, you are by definition in the mainstream conversation. And technology, where we have a history of being not only on the fringe, because most people don't know what it is that we do for a living, but also very much relegated to it's those guys over there kind of a conversation. But now that business people and non-IT people are involved in the decision-making process, they're looking for some early clues, some indications of what we've always known as the nobody ever got fired for buying X phenomenon, right? There's always an X out there and somebody's like that. I will tell you, I agree with your philosophy. I don't think all of those are the correct ones to measure the industry. The way I look at it, I don't look at total spending. I don't look at the behavior of the very top crust of the industry. I look at the the what I will call adoption and attachment of the up and coming parts of the industry, right? So it's not just the startup innovators with something brand new, and it's not the Fang Fam group of I'm already multi-billions. My question is there a $10 million software company that can become a $200 million software company? Because people saw something that was so brand new, they'd never seen it before, and hundreds of thousands of them said, yep, that's a great idea. I'm going to adopt that, especially when the decision maker includes somebody outside of the IT department. And so, you know, whether you listen to, you know, our friends at Gartner, at Forrester, at any of the analyst groups in the industry, one of the principal metrics that we've been tracking for a couple of years is who's the human who says yes to this stuff. And this year we crossed the Rubicon where more than 50% of the decisions are made by somebody who's outside of the IT department. That's how you become a standard line item in people's budgeting process.
So a couple of thoughts. First of all, as far as I'm concerned, Kramer made up this acronym. He can do whatever he wants. I will say he's more about entertainment than anything else, and a little bit of humility for the three of us. Just because you say really, really smart things doesn't mean you're right all the time, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he made up this thing. And I will say, as a disclaimer, I invest in every one of those stocks individually, and I invest in exchange-traded funds that include those stocks. And so part of what is going on is he's literally saying, look, Netflix is down, we should drop them, and Microsoft is up, so we should add them. And it's literally following past behavior and saying those are the hot stocks, and which is great for headlines, right? But
sure,
it's not really, you know, we talked last week about, or maybe the week before, about chastising the media for how they present this stuff. Did you see the article recently? They added a bunch of moons to Saturn. So now Saturn has 82 moons, overtaking Jupiter, who only has 79. It's like, okay, we don't have to report everything that way.
Sure.
Including finances. You know, the ultimate measure of big capital technology has always been the NASDAQ. It's the entire index is designed to track technology stocks and the larger technology stocks. So QQQ is harder to say, but probably far more accurate than picking five stocks and saying these are the biggest five, so they get to be on the list. It doesn't take much brain power to pick the five biggest, best performing stocks this year. But I don't know that it's a strategy, you know?
Sure.
It makes good TV.
Yeah. And look, maybe I'm identifying a hole in the market that somebody has to be taking on, in terms of what I'm really desperate to know though, is I'm trying to look at, say, like the technology industry as the larger bit. I mean, is the NASDAQ the best way to do it? Sounds like it might be. I also will say that for me, there's two very simplistic metrics, one super simplistic and one probably more complicated. I will admit I have looked at IT spend for years as the number to try and get a sense of like, hey, how are companies investing in technology? I look at IT spend. Now, it's always been bigger every single year I've looked at it, so I'm not sure it's as useful as I'd like it to be. And then the other one that I do use, but I think it is reasonably tactical, is I look at Paul Dipple's published numbers around the Service Leadership Index, which shows profitability of IT services firms that he tracks. And that's a reasonably large sample set because he's measuring it in the thousands. So I'll use that as a metric, but I'm kind of looking for, and maybe I'm throwing this out to the ether and saying, hey, listeners, I want to hear what you're thinking about in terms of like, what are the numbers that tell us the health of our overall industry?
Well, yeah. Well, what trends are underneath it? Because two trends that stand out, one that Ryan talked about is that, you know, everybody wants to, you know, move this decision outside of the IT department and into marketing or, you know, different areas. One of the things that's happening is that all of these measures of IT, if you look at the big, big companies, we have things like the Russell 1000, the Fortune 500, who are by definition the biggest companies. And the other trend is those companies are becoming, they're sort of non-IT companies becoming IT companies. Everybody, as CompTIA says, every company is an IT company, right?
Yep. And
so as that grows, I think it has a bigger influence on their revenue.
Yep. And that's the thing, right? It's not that pure tech companies are finally being recognized and as viable investment targets. It's that technology has arrived at a point where it's an indispensable component of all the other industries, right? Everybody's an IT company. But I mean, you know, my basic take is let's do the run on a combination of trailing indicators and leading indicators, right? The stock market has a habit of rewarding growth or accelerating growth at the expense of profit performance. And there are other measures like Paul's that measure profit performance as opposed to growth. You kind of have to look at both sides of that thing. And it's about the trajectory in addition to the performance of our industry. And again, to borrow something we've been talking about for a couple of years now and that you're really digging into, Dave, it's not just the products of technology that indicate we might have a bead on the future. It is fundamentally the business of technology, meaning the people who make stuff, the people who buy stuff, and in between them, the people who deliver support and service this stuff. If those three categories are improving their financial conditions because of technology, then we're going in the right direction.
Very cool. Well, we will certainly revisit this from time to time, both from the angle of finances and the angle of whether or not we are so mainstream that it's meaningless.
Right. Could quite be possible.
So speaking of, this is a transition, speaking of things that we've covered before, we just had the stories about the negative side of the drone industry. And now we have a very positive story, in my opinion, which is the UPS service, United Parcel Service, has gotten approval to build an entire airline based on drones, which I think is very cool.
See, so to go back to our previous reference to this, I might actually be winning this bet where the delivery is going to happen prior on a drone rather than a robot, right? I think we might be going in that direction. But I agree with you. The proof point on this is fascinating. It's not that there's the proof of concept of I used a drone a time to deliver a package. It's thousands of deliveries, and granted, at this point, still a very short delivery distance, which is fine, right? In the early stages, but this is not something that's been done 5 or 10 times. This is tens of thousands of delivery points with accuracy, with timeliness, with lessons learned. I think if there's somebody who has the wherewithal and the logistical framework to figure it out, it might be the guys at UPS, which is great. But boy, they are an early indicator of the fact that everybody else needs to be paying attention to a new solution to the physical last mile.
Well, right? So again, the bet is, you know, I want to order a burrito. Do I get it brought via drone or via robot first? That's the bet. But what's interesting about this, though, is that, of course, their first implementation is a medical campus. It's focused on kind of medical transfers, which I thought was really an interesting use case where when you dig into it, you know, I guess I knew this without knowing it, that there's a ton of stuff that moves around within a medical facility and within a medical campus, and you have all kinds of supplies, and there's a lot of inefficiency to that. And of course, if you can make it a drone, it'll make a lot of sense. I have visions of the Star Wars prequels of all of those ships flying through the skies all at once. You know, it's really, this is when you get to technology being really good at solving a particular problem and doing it in a really interesting way. For me, there's still so many interesting open questions about this. You know, what's the noise of this? How do they all fly around to make sure that they're not bumping into one another? How busy can you make the skies and it still be serviceable?
Right. I have to say, it's such a cool proof of concept. So just to back up just a tiny bit. So UPS has a license from the FAA to literally have an unlimited number of drones. Their model is to do campus-wide within, say, college campus, limited to 55 pounds. But imagine, you know, like Dave was saying, like all these robots zipping back and forth all over the place. When I think of the scene from Star Wars where they're all going down the hallway and there's all these fun and interesting robots, that's kind of what the hidden areas of hospitals look like today. Because hospitals are using robots to deliver documents, and they've been doing that for like at least 25 years. But taking it to the drones means you can go from building to building very quickly, whether that's an important medical transportation or whatever. Could be a burrito. But the part that is so interesting for me is that with UPS, what do they know better than anything else? They know logistics. And then you just add a little money and a little artificial intelligence to that. And I can imagine these drones like literally flying an inch apart because they're never going to collide with each other and everything is delivered exactly on time. It's a pretty impressive project.
See, and my my pop culture reference for the visualization of this is the traffic scene in The Fifth Element.
Oh, I almost said
that's a good one.
the layers upon layers upon layers, and once you get down into the fog, all bets are off, right? That's where I think we have the danger of going if people who start getting involved in this don't have the savvy of logistics like a UPS, right? So it's not purely a technology solution. It is business people using technology to solve a functional problem. The cool part is it's, if you stop and think about the statistics of how we use our vehicles in this world, I read recently that when you think of car trips, right? I get in a car, turn it on, drive that thing, park it, get out, do something meaningful, drive back. The average length of all car trips, including rural America, is somewhere under 3 miles. Now, I don't think a drone army yet is ready to deliver things from Seattle to Washington, D.C., but I do think that within a 1 to 2 mile radius around my local burrito shop, that's absolutely manageable.
Well, what's interesting, and I didn't bring this up, but when I was on vacation and was in Dublin, the A-loft we were staying in had a delivery robot within the hotel.
Nice.
Branded as Lofty, the staff could program it and it knew the layout of the hotel and could deliver things to your room via robot. Now, it was indoors, and notably, they did not serve burritos, so I couldn't win the bet. I couldn't win the bet by ordering anything, I see it. I definitely see these implementations. Now, I thought it was a little gimmicky more than practical in that particular, because they had
cool
two service robots. Yeah, it totally is cool, but it wasn't a highly useful thing, because I saw how they literally the staff was having to program it, like, okay, here's the item and here's where it goes, and you tell it, and it was not exactly highly efficient. But you can definitely project out and say, okay, this can be very useful in these short range kind of scenarios. You know, for me, if I'm pivoting it and saying, okay, you know, hey, anybody who's delivering IT services, why do you care here? What's the takeaway? You know, there are all kinds of scenarios that you need to be thinking about now. Are you in an industry that uses any kind of short-range delivery? Can you leverage this technology? Will your customers be impacted to it? Will they have to factor this into the way they receive deliveries or their own facilities? Or are there security issues to think about on this in terms of tracking and the security of the stuff in flight? You know, right now we have people. What happens if someone takes out a drone and steals a package in transit?
Yeah,
right.
Well, see, and that's the point, right? The business of technology requires us to consider what is the customer use case, what is the functional technology solution, and then what are all the layers of the implementation, integration, monitoring, and management of that solution in real time. There's never been a product born that did not need that intermediate channel implementation support, because the customer simply isn't going to have that. Now, I will, we all know a bunch of people around the industry who have opinions about innovative technologies, emerging technologies, right? And I just, I have to say, the statement that I don't see myself ever selling a drone because I have never sold a drone is not the same as actually being different from our our business models. It's just not yet our business model now. It's going to be. I believe these are going to be endpoints that need drastic administration.
Well, and I will, I guess, conclude this with a projection of the future. One of the mega trends is everything is moving to a service, right? I can totally see a race where now UPS is in the race to develop a service of logistics and drone management that they then are in a battle to license, and their competition is going to be Uber and Lyft, right, who have very analogous things with regard to bicycles and scooters and all this other stuff. But someday you could see yourself selling the logistics delivery service module to one of your clients, whether it's in construction or anything else. So that literally could be part of our future a lot sooner than I was expecting.
It is going faster. Now, so Carl, I'm going to agree, but I need to point out that from my perspective, I'm going to want you to pull Uber and Lyft out of there because they have awful business models that are not making any money. They are subsidizing transportation. So you're right. I think UPS is the right company. I'm going to go, Uber and Lyft. Yeah, those guys have to figure out how to
make money. That's what I'm saying. So what if UPS wins and Uber loses? Uber ends up licensing the logistics technology from UPS.
UPS or Amazon.
Right. Exactly. So, all right. So that was, we're going to look forward to this, and we love talking about drones. And CompTIA has a drone community now that you can listen into the next call. So check that out. And we'll actually put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Well, topic, the third thing I think we're going to talk about today is some changes to laws. And I think, you know, the funny thing is as our industry continues to mature, we're much more impacted by regulation and legal battles than anything else. There was an article in Ars Technica talking about the federal judge who's upheld the U.S. government's right to eliminate net neutrality, but they also did a little caveat there, and they have reaffirmed a state's right to enforce net neutrality within the borders, which, of course, anytime that you've got Fed versus state makes the legal rulings incredibly complicated, as we are also seeing over on the privacy front as that shakes out. And I think we're up to 48 states have some form of privacy regulation, with California leading the way there. This was really kind of an interesting take for me because, you know, the FCC has changed their position between administrations, and, you know, but with the states now being able to regulate it as well, you know, guys, what's your take on net neutrality? And I want to also then say, what does it mean for people delivering services?
So my first fundamental take on net neutrality is that the net doesn't respect physical or national borders. And we don't have the ability to have a patchwork of physical regulations that try to govern digital traffic. Quite frankly, none of us knows right now whether the server that this podcast is being stored to is in California or in Connecticut or anywhere in between. Don't know, don't care. That's kind of the fundamental business model of the internet. And eliminating the concept of net neutrality, I think, causes tremendous separation between the haves and the have-nots in the industry. Those who already have a position are going to cement it. Those who are trying to gain a foothold in the industry are going to be prevented from doing it. And the complexity of regulation is going to distract from the business of innovation. So I have long had a very aggressive opinion about this particular topic and the direction that it's gone. And I the fact that it was reaffirmed wasn't necessarily a surprise to me, but it is a humongous disappointment, because I think that what it means is people in the channel are going to spend more time learning and dealing with privacy and regulation statutes than they are innovating and implementing cool new technology solutions.
I have to say, Ryan, this is one of the few areas where I completely disagree with you. I'm not sure that there's a there. I've heard everybody, you know, all these horror stories. Oh, net neutrality. When that ends, the world as we know it will come to an end as well. And, you know, the only real argument is, am I going to get one news channel faster than another news channel, one video channel faster than another video channel? Where I am, I literally switch back and forth between the hotel Wi-Fi and using the hotspot on my phone. You know, when I'm going to access PayPal or my bank accounts, I just use the hotspot on my phone and never the public Wi-Fi. Both of those, like my crappy phone internet service and my crappy hotel internet service, are both good enough to stream video. And so I don't know that it's ever affected my choice of what to watch or where I'm going to go. Well, we've got the fear of net neutrality on one side. On the other side, we have dramatic increases in bandwidth everywhere, and I don't see that coming to a stop anytime soon.
See, Carl, I'll disagree, because for me, so I don't think you're wrong to think about it from the kind of the video provider perspective. I think that's not where I'm concerned. I'm more concerned on the specific example of, I'm a small startup and I want to I'm going to deliver something, you know, something out on the internet, and Google or Amazon decide that they're also in my space and they're going to pay to have their version of that service delivered faster because they're bigger and they can write the money, and that will squeeze me out of my ability to deliver that thing. And thus either I can't do anything myself, or I am forced to be in their public clouds versus a private cloud for whatever reason I decided to do it. And I'm forced to play with them, or they squeeze me out entirely. Those are the scenarios that I'm worried about.
So again, I understand that that's theoretically a problem, but think of, you know, a service where that can actually happen. It would be something like video games, right? Which is your deal, right?
Well, it is, I guess, but what I'm looking at this saying is we have plenty of evidence of big tech companies, Amazon, Google, that are crushing competitors in the womb there. And I'm just saying, this is just one more lever. I don't want to give them more levers to do that.
So I agree with you, and Amazon's always my favorite example. I mean, they literally, when something is selling well, they will go have an exact copy made in China and then undercut their biggest so-called partner. I mean, they are the worst partner you could possibly have. As a buyer, I love them. As a seller, I hate them, right?
Right.
So I get that you need to keep that kind of stuff under control. But again, I just don't know that I've seen an actual example of this in the real world, because the young Turks who come up and invent something new, their audience takes over. And, you know, I don't know that we've seen a stifling of this. When the internet was growing and expanding the fastest ever, it was when there was no regulation whatsoever. And we've kind of gone back to that. And so I think it just opens the doors to more innovation.
Well, and I think what we don't know, right? We all remember the day when we purchased a PC that had a 1 gigabyte hard drive, and we thought, pshaw, you'll never need that much data storage. I think we're at that level, right? Current usage of bandwidth makes me look at the capacity of 5G and say, we'll never need more than 5G. And yet what I know is that we will innovate services and business models that are built on the fundamental premise of real-time fat bandwidth data delivery, right? I don't know what those models are yet necessarily, whether it's AI, AR, et cetera. Those things are to be invented. And I think we will find is that we will look back in the future and realize the only ones of those services that become mainstream are the ones who've been given permission to become mainstream by the folks who own the pipes. And I think that that's where the telephone industry finally opened up, right? We know that the mass market adoption of managed services was only ever physically possible when we got ubiquitous access to broadband technology. You could do stuff remotely that you couldn't do before. I think that if we lived in a, you know, like the Bell companies of the world could still tell people who could and could not get access to the pipes, we wouldn't have seen the advent of a lot of broadband business models. I think that's the problem in the future, is that we don't know yet what we need 5G and beyond for, but we also know that somebody's going to control our access.
Well, let's also loop in an earlier discussion that right now, all of these companies are being dragged before Congress. And so there's going to be a look-see about what constitutes fair behavior versus monopolistic behavior. And so that might be the angle that solves the problems you guys are worried about without calling it net neutrality.
Well, maybe you're putting a lot of faith into the U.S. legal and U.S. governmental system to fix it. Look,
total faith in Congress.
I mean, I you know, here's the nightmare scenario, right? And I'm going to make it super tactical. You know, Microsoft decides to get in to do more with remote monitoring and management technologies. They want to do a better job of doing remote support, and they pay for preferred access to endpoints for their delivery system. That's possible in a world where net neutrality is not a thing. You know, I'm going to make it super scary for a moment for IT solution providers. That's a real thing in the world of network.
I'm far more scared of pissing somebody off and having them drop bombs on my house with a drone.
Well, that's fun. And story one makes it possible. So we've come full circle today.
We have a ranked order of things that make us hide under the desk. But the control in the hands of the wealthy of the interwebs and our access to innovative content and business services, I think that is something that gets on the list. It might not be the scariest thing we're dealing with today, but it is definitely scary.
Well, once again, we have revisited topics that we will revisit again. We hope you find this interesting. And if you do or don't, please send us an email and give us a thumbs up and, you know, comment down below. We would love to hear from you and, you know, get a mailbag going if you have comments or questions that you want to, you know, get on the air here.
We'd love to take some. Who's going to be the first user submitted topic? I'm dying to know that.
What have we not covered that we should be covering?
Exactly.
Yeah, if you have a fascinating topic you'd like us to cover, and you are the first, hey, we will say your name out loud, and we will tell people how smart you are. So please keep the conversation going.
Very cool. All right. Well, I think that will do it for episode 29 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.